Most financial advisors follow the industry playbook. Elite advisors choose a different path. I'm Sten Morgan. Welcome to the Elite Financial Advisor Podcast, where top advisors share the strategies, mindsets, and the stories behind building a better business, adding more value, and the courage to grow through resistance. Because becoming an elite advisor is not about working harder and longer. It's about choosing a better path.
I always joked, and people told us in early days of the mentor stand, which was, you're going to be underpaid for the first 4 years, but if you can survive it, you'll be overpaid for the rest of your life and your career. And I think that did actually play out. First year, I think I made $11,000.
There's people that are ready, willing, and able to help. They're waiting for an opportunity. Like, are you willing to take the risk or have the courage to say, I need help? And then that person's like, whether they were praying for somebody to come around to do that, or like they're just ready at that time. Sure. That's something I'm trying to reframe, that like asking for help is not needy.
Remember your customer. Like, if I come and give you like pounds of homework and you're like, wait, this is it's like a colonoscopy. I don't want to do this. I'm going to kick it down the road. I'm not doing it. Right. So
yeah,
I think the key is make it easy and keep it high level early.
On today's episode, we are going to hang out with Adam Holt. Adam is a very successful financial advisor, also the founder of Asset Map, great fintech company. Adam and I share a lot in common based on our stories, getting in the industry, kind of the grind phase, and then trying to figure out how do you grow faster? How do you, whether it's through community, mentorship, unlock a new level of yourself that maybe you didn't even think you were capable of before? Adam, welcome to the podcast, brother.
Good to see you, Stan. How you been?
Good, man. I'm excited to dive in. We try to keep our podcast tight and practical. There's a lot for us to talk about.
You got it.
So we'll dive right in. So I'm sure people have heard of you. I'm confident of that if you're in this industry, if you're an advisor. But I think they might have heard of you as the founder of Asset Map. Hey, that guy runs a really cool big advisory firm. And that guy's also doing some really cool outreach dad stuff. So I want everybody to know your story, because we got a chance to hang out, and it's something that I'm like, man, if I could follow Adam's footsteps, like that'd be pretty cool. So how did you get into the business as an advisor?
Well, you know, I think like most of us, we kind of fall into the business. I actually wound up going to a job fair 2 years after college, saying I didn't want to work for the government and research anymore. I figured I wasn't going to get anything done. So I was curious about finance, went to a job fair and got intrigued by these guys that said they were doing financial planning. Found out I was a life insurance agent, and I sell life insurance.
What did they have? What was the free giveaway at their booth that got you to like hang out with them?
They were so smart. They had the coolest people running their booth. They were like good looking, well dressed. They had their stuff together. They talked financial planning, and everybody was making $1 million. And I got really intrigued. Turns out, yes, life insurance was my path, man. And like most of us, you know, figured out that we could use financial planning to sell life insurance and gather assets, mm-hmm. and then really just got hooked on it. So that was my foray into the business. Yeah, like most of us.
Did you start with a big firm, small group?
I started actually with a fantastic outlet or an outfit here in Philadelphia. It was like the number one agency for Equitable at the time.
Oh, nice.
And so these guys really did have their stuff together. They did have a full financial planning unit and all these different outlets, not just singular focus. So, but you know, we all have to carry a quota as well. So I learned sales, and how to do sales, of course.
So did you start producing on a team, or were you like, I'm just going to figure this out on my own? Like, what was the journey?
I was in a district like everybody who starts, you know, just scrapping along and trying to figure it out. I remember my buddy, was actually my manager, was hired a week before me. So we were both learning the business.
But he did know more than you, I guess.
He knew a couple things. Yeah, he knew how to sell, I'll tell you what. But we joke that we raised each other in the business in the early days. Actually, so it's funny to see the guys that survived that business. Some of them are the top producers at the broker dealer. So I think we really learned how to fact find and how to, you know, help families and do the things that I think are very seldom taught today, which I think is a kind of dying art.
Yeah. When did you go from sole advisor learning to sell stuff? Same path that you went through is kind of how I got into the business, until I was like, oh, wait, I'm running a business. I probably need to hire some people. I had a team might be good. Like, when did that level up happen?
First couple of years, I think like everybody else, you know, how we're underpaid for the first couple of years, to the point of, I don't know if I'm going to survive this or pay my rent. I think I always joke, and people told us in early days of the mentor stand, which was you're going to be underpaid for the first 4 years, but if you can survive it, you'll be overpaid for the rest of your life and your career. And I think that did actually play out. First year, I think I made $11,000. My second year, I used financial planning. I actually became number two in my agency for my class, and I got noticed by a couple guys that became my mentor. They were the top two advisors in all of the country. They had just merged their practice, and they were looking for a young guy to kind of bring some youth into the org. And I was right place, right time, because I had I had proven that I could use planning to actually advise. And you know what happened is that instantly this was the year 2000. Remember Y2K was going on. You might not remember that, man, but
I remember we were stockpiling, dude.
It was like you did not want to start an investment practice in year 2000. Like the market got crushed, tech bubble happened. And it was a real tough slog. But after 2 years of doing that and kind of being around them, working with ultra high net worth families, I was about to leave, and I was going to go to another firm to do investment management. And my mentor came to me and said, "Hey, we think you could be our successor if you learn the estate planning practice, and you're just going to carry our bags for the next 2 years." And I got an unbelievable mentorship. It's in that time actually that I started creating AssetMap, because I just had to deal with such complexity of these households. And I was like, this is really complicated. How do I explain to my now staff? So now all of a sudden I had instant staff.
Got it.
And these guys didn't want to deal with any admin or any kind of ops. They were core producers or their family guys, golfers, and then unbelievable producers. And they wanted to spend their time in charity and golf and family. That's really all they want to spend all their time on. And so I had to really learn the business back office and learn to operate a firm. And after a couple of years, we started having some success with it. And I said, "Listen, if I'm the successor, I want to design the firm how I want to." And they said, "We don't want to do it. Go for it." So I was able to kind of take that and use their infrastructure and their capital to really expand the firm. So early stories for sure.
Yeah, that's great. So you were thrust into, I got to become an entrepreneur faster. And maybe if you would have just stayed on this kind of solo grind path, which gave you some great skills earlier than maybe some other advisors might get.
I think you're right on. I mean, the entrepreneurial stuff, I got to feed, got to feed myself, got to learn how to be scrappy, how to work till midnight, 6 days a week. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't avoid that. Although I think people are trying to avoid that these days.
Sure, yeah.
Just like, get rich quick. There's so many schemes out there and strategies, and people are, kind of aggravated that they're not winning fast enough. I think it's a shame. And I think we should kind of level set. So most of the people that have created some level of success had to do the hard knocks, right? They had to go through the fire to survive it. Because the key to that, by the way, Stan, I wholeheartedly believe this, even for my own daughter, is that if you don't go through that fire, you never know how to survive it when it comes and you're not prepared. And I think we all run through kind of ebbs and flows in our business. Sometimes, and as I tell my own sales team today, sometimes the leads aren't coming in, and you got to pick up the phone. You got to go toes to toes. You got to make something happen. Go figure it out. Like we can't just keep handing it to you. There's going to be time.
Yeah. When met with the first layer of resistance, that doesn't mean stop or you're doing something wrong. It's like, no, it's actually supposed to be there, and there's going to be five more. So expect it.
Yeah. Well, if it was easy, everyone would be successful. I think that there's it's in the tough times you really prove your salt, right? So
no doubt.
I think that was a good. It was interesting because in the middle of that, about 2005, 2006, I actually had an epiphany, and I was a classic financial planner. I did enormous analysis. I love the analysis. I'm a spreadsheet junkie. I always thought that clients loved my analysis. They were there for that. Sure. Like they don't tell me what they want. They're like, "We need financial planning. What is financial planning? Oh, let me show you." And I would show the cooking, at the dining room table. And that was not what they wanted. And I had this asset map. I used it as like my internal visualization to help organize a family. And this guy, actually, it's kind of funny because I printed out my e-money report, my Morningstar, and I brought all this stuff, wonderful. Plopped it on the desk, and his wife couldn't make, I was at a desk, it was actually his dining room table, back when we would actually go see clients, as they were big enough, and his wife couldn't join the meeting, and he saw me writing on my asset map, because I used it internally, and he literally took it away from me. He's like, "What is this thing you got here?" And I'm like, I explained it to him. It's a visualization of your household, all this stuff. I can keep you organized. He's like, "Do me a favor. Don't bring back that huge pile anymore." He's like, I can't explain that to my wife. I'm not going through it. She's going to be angry with me. So can you just give me a copy of this and I'll explain everything. She's going to be super happy. I said, okay. It took me another year to get it compliance approved.
Nice.
Yeah, it was so effective. Why not make it difficult, right?
Sure.
But once I got a compliance approved, I tripled my production that year. And then I tripled it my second year. And then I tripled it my third year off the prior year. And I went from making X to now 9-10X.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, people were like, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm doing this. I'm solving the problem that the client is asking for, and we keep delivering something else. They're like, can you give me a burger? And you keep bringing like this whole 5-course meal. And I realized as I worked up to kind of higher net worth marketplace and then ultimately into corporate marketplace, which is where I just went where the money was, right?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I just kept uncovering these huge opportunities. And then I trained a team around it. And we got to about $1.2 billion of AUM kind of on the side, still doing $3 to $5 million of life production every year. Wow. And then I just showed it on stage in 2012 and a bunch of guys were like, I want to use that. And that's how it started. Those 20 people are now 7,500 people around the world using
it. That's amazing, man.
So yeah, it's over a short period of time.
That's right.
Yeah, right. Just like that. It just happened. So
yeah. Well, I'd love to go back in your story a little bit. It triggered part of my story a little bit when you mentioned that there two guys said, hey, come work with us.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a couple years and then you'll be on the team.
Yeah.
I did that with a very high producer at one point, but it was at a Mexican restaurant on a napkin.
Yeah.
And I was 23 and I was like, this is awesome. Like, I'll give you everything for the next 2 years. And 2 years came and he changed his mind.
Oh, man.
And I was like, you know, obviously a lot of lessons learned in business. Not that he was nefarious about it, but I didn't get it in writing. You know, like, it was almost, I was hoping this person was going to follow through. And he was like, hey, you can take 50 of our lowest clients and go start your own practice. And I was like, this is not what we talked about.
Yeah. What
did you get it in writing? Did it just happen to work out for you because those guys did the right thing? Or what was the kind of behind the scenes on that?
You know, it's a funny question. I appreciate what you shared because in my situation, I was 24 and well, maybe I was 26 by the time they made that offer. And why it was relevant for me is they are incredibly forthcoming family men. I said that we actually run the firm very much like family first. Every one of our employees, you know, if there's something going on, this is like a mantra that I've learned from them. Like, you're supposed to be there for your family. Like, we'll cover you. We got it. Like, work can always wait. And the reason I say that to you is because I always trusted them. Even though that timeline went to 8 years, not 2 or 3. They didn't give me a range. It took 8 years for me to really take over legit. Wow. And then they still actually produce today. I mean, they're both golfing. They're in their mid-70s. Sure. So they never really retired. But they kind of created the capacity for me to grow at my own pace. Trust takes a lot. You know, when you build a business, like, you think about it right now. If you took your practice and said, yeah, I'm going to bring somebody in and they're going to take over in 2 years, you might not want to live by that deadline, right? So
that's true. You're right.
The key is, I think, transparency. But you're right. Getting in writing is clearly important.
Yeah.
We're having massive trust.
Yeah. Raise your hand if you've ever been to a financial advisor event that didn't really change you. Maybe the speakers were interesting. Maybe you had a few good conversations. But when you got home, nothing about your business actually improved. I've been to a lot of these events over the years. Events full of inspiration, but short on practical strategies you can actually use. The advisor of the future knows how to clearly communicate their value, prospect with intention, and deliver financial planning advice clients actually understand. That's why we built How to Charge Live. This isn't an event built around hype or theory. It's an event built for advisors by advisors. 1,000 advisors have attended How to Charge Live, including advisors with more than 20 years of business experience. And over we hear the same thing. This is the best advisor event I've ever attended. I want to personally invite you to join me at my office in Franklin, Tennessee this October for 2 days focused on helping you build more valuable business. I'm going to walk you through my entire process, how to communicate your value well, how to add value through fee-based financial planning, and how to create a framework to help you scale your business faster. Seats are limited, so visit howtochargelive.com to secure your seat now. So I want to dive into kind of the asset map piece of that, because I think there's some core teachings there. When I heard you talking about it, I think simplicity is a gift. We've talked about that before. Like,
true.
The overwhelming somebody with complexity is not a gift. And you know, I'm going to data them into submission for them to just say yes, because they're so confused. They don't know what to do.
That is a sales technique.
Print out e-money, print out all this stuff, and just drop it in front of them. But when it comes to back of your practice, I mean, now I'm sure if there was younger Adam, you'd say, hey, man, good job working hard. You didn't give up. But here's three things I would have done differently if I could go back.
Oh, wow.
Knowing what I know now. For all the advisors listening, what's kind of some from your playbook?
Wow. Yeah, I have to give you three things that I would do differently.
We can even make it one if it's that good.
Five. You complain, I'm going to make it eight.
That's right.
Wait a minute. That's a good question. I think I was very blessed that I had access to staff that knew what they were doing. Mm. And they knew how to execute the things that I was not good at, like the applications, the navigate from underwriting to implementation to ACATS, all these things that I was like, I don't want to know how to. You got to learn that when you run yourself so that you can empathize with what your staff has to do. But the first thing that I think I would invest in again before I had the money was people. I would get staff, get support. There's plenty of books out there, Who, Not How, a Dan Sullivan book, as well as Traction from Gino Wickman, very popular in my entrepreneurial circles, which basically talks about having an integrator and a visionary. And if you want to spend your time doing highest revenue producing work, you got to have an integrator. Even today, I have an integrator in every single business I own or run. I do not want to be implementing, operating. Nobody reports to me anymore now, just my integrator. Nice. 70 some people in different companies. And I cannot do that. Don't want to do that. I think that was the huge leverage point. I got to the point, actually, my coach, I'd always have a coach too. That's the other thing. I've been getting coached since I was 16, arguably, because my mom took me to Tony Robbins when I was 16 years old. And I went through the whole gamut of his program. So, you know, that was a big part of our family. And as soon as I could afford it, I hired my own coach. One would argue I couldn't afford it, but you also can't not afford it. And so whether you're getting thought leadership from people like yourself and in your community or you're following, I think it's really important that people have not only a mentor, and if you don't have a role model, that is a really huge power up, right? Like when we were kids, we would role model like Michael Jordan. We'd be like, I want to play like Mike, or I want to build a business like whomever, who was kind of like, you know, really popular, whatever your time zone. I think for me, it was GE, right? So it was, of course, I'm forgetting everybody's name, but like, what, you know, we can have like a Warren Buffett style. I don't need to know them. More recently, it's been Richard Branson, just because I've had his interactions and I just gotten to know him, which is crazy. But having a role model and having a mentor are two really important things. Some people claim, you know, Jesus is my role model. Like, it's important to have someone whom you could try to emulate. And I think it's challenging in our business because, you know, there's not a lot of role models out there, right? Who do I try? What would they do? Sans training some AI bot to say, hey, act like Richard or act like someone you respect. Yeah.
Or I think there's a lot of data out there around like, here's a quick way to do it. Like the mentors, the virtual mentors are like, here's some hacks, you know, where it's maybe less. I know in my story, I felt like I was really in desire to mentor, but what the firms I landed at in the first part of my career, what I thought was a mentor was just a general agent that wanted me to produce a lot.
Mm.
And they never really even signed up to be on my mentor. I never even knew to ask them. But when I looked to them as like a moral compass or a spiritual guide, I was like, oh, they're not filling that gap because that's not probably the right person for that thing. And so I was in search of a mentor and like thinking that to find a mentor, like the clouds are going to part someday and they're just going to fall in front of me.
No.
And it took a while for me to one level up to be able to like, one, to be willing to ask, because that feels kind of needy at times. It's like, hey, I think I need to be needy at times.
Yeah.
And then mine, eventually I found somebody through just referrals and somebody kind of at this right time, we meshed together and he's a great, great man who's helped me a lot. Mm. What would you tell the people listening if they don't have a natural mentor in their circle, short of kind of virtual mentors online? Like what could they do?
Well, I think there's an important distinction that I probably left out, and that it was great. Thanks for sharing that story, Stan, because I think people do need to hear it. a role model is someone you generally don't have connection with. It doesn't know even you exist in many cases. But a mentor does, and a mentor cares about your path. And I was really surprised in the early days of my youth. I remember calling out amongst upon CEOs and people who are leaders to try to do business with them. And I always felt, gosh, they're such jerks. Why are all CEOs jerks? And I just because they didn't give me any attention, like they didn't return my calls. And I'm like, is there something like that happens when you become a CEO? And I realized actually that when I became a CEO, I said, it's not that you become a jerk. It's that you get focused on what matters and everything else becomes a distraction. And so if it's not in my agenda of what I'm trying to move forward, I recognize I have to say no more. And that's not personal.
That's fair.
This is just my agenda is this. And if I want to achieve my goal, I got to stay focused because I got 100 reasons why I can get tripped up. Now, the reason I say that to you is this. If you approach people who are successful and you change the frame from, I want to do something for you to, I actually need your help. Think about this. If you ask people for help and they're generally people who are helpful people or they've achieved some level of success, you have a great desire to give back and to contribute. And so I'm always surprised at how sometimes asking people who have achieved something that you might want to emulate or you're looking for a mentor, ask them for help. And if they respond in a way that seems sincere and authentic, that's something to really pursue. It's not needy. People recognize they didn't get here on their own. None of us did. We didn't get here on our own. We did it because somebody helped us. Maybe lots of people. So I think that's the real key is recognize, I think live from a world of abundance and recognize that people out there do want to help. You just got to approach them in the right way.
Yeah, and I appreciate the correction because I think the negative spin on it is neediness versus there's people that are ready, willing, and able to help. They're waiting for an opportunity. And like, are you willing to take the risk or have the courage to say, I need help? And then that person's like, hey, whether they were praying for somebody to come around to do that or like they're just ready at that time. That's something I'm trying to reframe that like asking for help is not needy. It could be. It's putting an opportunity out in the world and, you know, if the right person grabs it, like I think in some of your story, it's life-changing.
Well, it's honesty, right, too. I mean, I think the reality is that people, I believe mentors will show up when the mentee is ready to listen, right? The teacher, you probably heard that analogy. Or metaphor.
I've seen Star Wars, so that sounds like a Yoda reference.
No, that's good. Thank goodness.
That's a good Yoda reference.
I was going to judge you, but I'm a huge Star Wars fan myself.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's a really important part. Don't forget to ask for help and do it in an authentic way. You'd be surprised. You might be surprised who shows up to help you.
So let's shift to the asset map story. I know you already kind of shared, there's definitely genius in it and creativity in it, but it was you were almost solving your own need. And then somebody was like, hey, what are you doing? And then the entrepreneur part of you was like, hey, there's probably something to this. But you used it for your own practice for how long until you shared it with everybody else?
2006, I think I told you, was the compliance. And then 2012, I showed it on stage. 2013, I wound up, because we had so much demand, we had to rebuild the entire platform for an enterprise grade, you know, kind of given what the market was changing, security, and you know, all that other stuff. Yeah. So that's when we started investing other people's money into AssetMap. Now it's gone through a series B investments, 50 employees, you know, 20 countries, multiple languages. I mean, it's interesting to see how universal. One of the things I wanted to really design into it, because I actually happen to be really interested in design, Stan. I always joke that I'm an artist who became a financial advisor. And I really appreciate intentional design, right? Putting things where they could be that would be thoughtful or empathetic, so that when you need it, you know where it is. Yeah. And one of the things I realized is that what was universal about all people with skill or without skill in this country, not in this country, in other cultures, is there's universality around you got people that matter and they're your big why. That's why I do everything is for the people in my bus, in my car, in my house, whatever you want to call it, the household. Yeah. And they own, control, and benefit financial instruments of which they're really just four. There's assets, there's liabilities, there's income sources. And there's insurances. And these are all basically denominated in some currency. And we only care about five things. What is it? It's an IRA. Okay. Who owns it? Sten owns it. Where is it located? Schwab. What's it worth? 100 grand. What's a tax wrapper? Tax qualified. That's pretty much all you need to know. And that's true in every jurisdiction as I did more and more research, whether it's, you know, working in Japan or you're working in Germany or wherever, it's the same thing. And so the whole core to AssetMap was, could we just display any financial relationship and then just get permission to talk about it? I don't need to know what you invested in or how it's performing or what's the fees. Just tell me you have an inventory somewhere and let's talk about it. And then it's all conversational. And that's really the key.
Nice. Where do you see, when it comes to an advisor adopting a new piece of technology, there's a learning curve to it. They have to learn how to present it within AssetMap. What's that journey been like? Because advisors, I'm sure, see it and they're like, I love it. And then I'm sure some are like, sounds great, Adam, but then they don't implement it. They don't weave it into their practice where they get the benefit from it.
Look, if there's any reason why the Peloton is useless, it's because guys don't get on it.
Yeah.
And I one might argue that the same thing is true for most of these tools. Like, we buy it inspirationally, but we basically don't implement. Right? There's plenty of analogies we can all think about for that. AssetMap was designed and is designed to be same day effective. You buy it one day, you use it in the meeting that afternoon or tomorrow. You can wait another day if you really want to go through training and do it. But it was designed that we could, in 15 minutes, basically have a conversation. But I will tell you, there's some really interesting nuances I've realized over the years. One of the things is that accuracy is actually not what clients are looking for. And when we typically do financial planning for people, we give me all the details. Give me every detail that you can know. And the client is like, I wasn't ready for a full inspection, right? Because they realize they're coming to you because they don't understand and know everything. So the person who typically works with a financial professional is what? Is generally, I'm not going to say they're financially illiterate. I'm going to say they're just not as interested in the details. They want someone to give them feedback. I'm okay. I'm not okay. So remember your customer. Like, if I come and give you like pounds of homework and you're like, wait, this is it's like a colonoscopy. I don't want to do this. I'm going to kick it down the road. I'm not doing it. Right. So I think the key is make it easy and keep it high level early. Figure out if it's the best, if this is a right relationship first. Like, this is what you got. This is what's going on in your life. I kind of see how I can help. I can help here, but I don't think I can help here. I want to bring in some other people, or maybe the personality is not right. I want to learn that early before I go through a, you know, 3-week process of financial planning. And I found for me, it was just like that CEO saying no to whatever it is that's distracting them. Yeah. I got myself literally at the peak of my practice to literally running all my meetings on Tuesday. I ran them between 8 and 5. I did 8 meetings in that one day, and I didn't work the rest of the week. The rest of the week, I worked on the business or on my fun projects, like AssetMap at the time. Yeah. And that was at the peak of my productivity, clearly doing 7 figures a year in production, but doing virtually no work except Tuesday. That was all my intellect work. And I went back to back to back, and all I did, and I didn't even prep. I just showed up and I looked at the AssetMap, and the rest of the team was there, but they didn't get to talk because clearly I like to talk. And all I did was connect and educate and inform and discuss what the future could be and coach. And then the other guys, well, we'll talk about performance at a separate meeting. Adam doesn't need to be here. Like, that's just the mechanics of what we were doing. But the real meat of where we built so much loyalty was just talking about their inventory and their family and their hopes and their dreams and the priorities. And what could we do to just make this a little bit better? That's all I wanted to do. That, it turns out, is actually imminently replicable and scalable.
Yeah, I think the tool can help you check the professional box, you know, versus me having to show you like a 20-page Morningstar. I think even an AssetMap, you pull that up, it's like, no, that person believes you know what you're doing just based on the fact there's a framework and a system in place and you don't just have like a yellow pad in front of you. And that's what we feel with certain clients. Like, I think the bar for most advisors is we're not great communicators. We don't really inspire people when they're in the room with us. We're kind of organized, but it doesn't feel like it's a repeatable, scalable, valuable process. And as we've tried to unlock that, which I had to get to that point when I realized I cannot brute force this practice to be any bigger by myself.
Yeah.
So I need the right people, but also, man, we need tech and systems. And whenever we find a bottleneck of like, hey, maybe this is the resistance point where people are getting stuck.
Mm-hmm.
how do we solve that? And for us, that was like on the deliverable side. Like, we had great strategy meetings, but like, yeah, how do we
you got it, right?
quickly and efficiently build a deliverable? So somebody says, hey, thanks for summarizing this for us.
Your stuff is great, Stan. I have to say, I mean, I've been so impressed. I think that's very akin to what we were trying to do. But the fact that you're able to give people such a great package to walk away with, I think that's one of the things that both of us have addressed or recognized that our clients were lacking, right? You can't say that this huge packet is a deliverable of thoughtfulness. That huge packet being like 800 pages of analysis, like that was, you were supposed to glean that into something I can use or use it to communicate down the line with my kids, my spouse, my trustee, whatever, whoever's in your life. And I think you've done a great job with that. So congrats.
Yeah.
As an advisor, I'm always curious about what is the path that most people don't choose. It may be the most difficult and challenging, but it will get me to my goal faster than everybody else. So we are launching Elite Plus. This is the community for advisors that really want to engage. You get to hang out with me a couple times a month live, asking questions, trying to grow our practice together. You'll get for free our financial planning software that'll help you deliver a better financial planning experience to your clients. You'll have access to Q&A cohorts with other advisors, and you'll have our full library of resources. This is for you if you are ready to go all in. If you want to be challenged to grow, you need to come hang out in Elite Plus. Join the Elite Plus membership today. Visit gobeelite.com and experience the program that transforms advisors into leaders.
So Asset Map's in a healthy spot, bunch of good people running it. You've unlocked the integrator thing, which is great. I'm still trying to figure out that part of it. But yeah, totally agree that's needed. And then other things have popped up into your world that are taking up some of your time. Well, what are you most excited about right now outside of the practice and Asset Map?
Well, one of the things that's really taken up now all that extra time that I keep freeing up is a project that I started with Derek Knottman. And some people know him. He's my podcasting co-host for 4 years. And in conversations like this off air, we were talking about our kids, you know, not surprising. We're talking about our families, our kids, what's exciting, what's challenging. And he, you know, we became really close. And one of the things he kept bringing up is, you know, we have kids the same age, both 14, about to turn 15, and running a practice, running multiple businesses. How do you balance this stuff? And there's jokes about there's no balance, right? There's only work-life integration. And especially with all of us working from some form of home or our offices and being much more flexible than ever before. The real challenge was how are we actually being intentionally leaders at home? Like, are we delivering the same level of intentional execution at the thing that matters more than the businesses that we're running day to day, right? We intentionally run, you know, some people work 40 hours, some 30, some 50, some 80 hours a week on their businesses and spend like an hour and a half on parenting. And the key to that was, again, like you said, technology scale and what are the resources you have? You have people, you maybe have a partner, maybe you have an integrator who's running the show, right? Men tend to play that role, especially if you're an entrepreneur. So the bottom line about it is we start asking ourselves, like, are we doing this right? And Derek, being the ultimate entrepreneur, reached out on LinkedIn and wrote on Richard Branson's page and said, hey, Richard, how did you handle being a dadpreneur? And Richard decided to write about it, got millions of views, tagged Derek in it. Derek used that to basically reach out to Richard saying, I have this life dream of coming to Necker Island, his island in the BVI, and running a mastermind program for dads, CEO dads. And he called me up. He's like, are you in? I'm like, I'm in. Like, whatever, buddy. Like, I'm in. Then he had a challenge. His partner dropped out and he called me up saying, I just committed this massive number. Will you join me? Will you run this thing with me? And I'm like, I got it. I'm in. And nice. We ran this, we built this thing together, a mastermind on Necker Island. And the real kind of interesting story about it is, and I hope people get an opportunity to think about this or build it or become part of it, is that community is really lacking right now. And if you don't have a community of peers, I really encourage everyone to find it. You got to find your tribe, people who kind of believe the same things. We talked about mentoring. We talked about role modeling. How do you actually start doing this stuff intentionally and make it part of your life, your rubric right? Some people have faith. They go on Sundays. Some people have, you know, different men's groups. Some people have a basketball league. I don't know, whatever it is. But the point is, we got to spend time with the people we want to aspire to be like or be more like. And we didn't have that. And so we said, we're going to build it. And we built it. Yeah. I don't know. That's been exciting to me, man.
What's the, I don't know if I want to say like mission statement, core values of it, but like for Rebel Dads, yeah. What is the, like, these are the things we're really pushing towards. Obviously intentionality for CEOs, entrepreneurs. What's kind of the layers underneath that of like, but, and this is how we do it.
Yeah, look, I think it's community first. We really created a community, as we say, for high performing men who are desiring to be better leaders at home and work. And that's what, and our acronym is REBEL, R-E-B-L, we cut the last E, and it stands for Responsible Entrepreneur Balanced Leader as our core things. So this, we have these kind of mantras behind it. So responsible means that you own it. Like you own the outcome, you own the income. Like it is, whatever you put into it is you got to kind of pay attention. So responsibility means a lot of things for us, but for the most part, it's like you got to take ownership. Entrepreneur means you got to build it. You got to build your family. You got to build your morals, values. You got to build it. No one's going to build it for you. You could default it. Balance means that you protect it, actually, that you protect the time and you don't allow for drastic imbalance. It's not that you're going to find equal balance. Nothing. You go try to stand on a ball. That's not very easy. It doesn't last very long. Yeah. That you protect it. And lastly, that you lead it, which basically means you lead by example. And that means you, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm blanking now. You model it. That's it. So leadership is all about modeling. And kids, as you know, don't do what you say. They do what you do. And that's the key, is to remember that you're on stage, whether you like it or not, when you have a family. And I think that was really interesting because we got Richard Branson involved once we went to his island. He said, this is cool. You got to help more people than just the 30 people that came here. And that's what inspired us to write the book that's coming out on Father's Day. So we took it a little bit further than a project, and we literally wrote a book. We interviewed 100
True entrepreneur dads. Form, yeah.
Yeah, right. Derek's like, let's just interview 100 CEO dads. I'm like, when are we going to do that? He's like, before Father's Day in 9 months, and we're going to write a book, and we're going to bring an app, and we're going to, like, so we did it.
That's awesome.
It's all done. And we're now in that mode, man. It's like.
Yeah, I love that, man.
Just put it out there. So,
yeah. Well, thank you. I think I've been trying to be more aware because I've written a book and I've started some companies and I recognize the path, like for you guys to do it, commit to it and finish it. I think there's a bunch of people that are like, thanks for doing that. Cause we either didn't have the time or the desire in the moment to like blaze that. And you guys are like, hey, follow us, which is pretty cool.
And look, we say constantly, and we try to keep humble. It's not perfect. But it's going to be done, and we know it's going to make an impact, and we don't need to fix everything. We just need to incrementally be a little bit better than we were individually yesterday. Yeah. And then we're going to fail some days, but can you keep that intentional? And then can you build a community and have mentors that are going to lift you up and keep you wanting to do it when you don't want to get on that Peloton, right? I think that is the key. It's a process and happens over a long period of time all of a sudden. And I think that's the key, just to keep pushing, keep pushing towards a goal.
Well said, brother. Adam, I appreciate you, man.
No, thank you. Thanks.
I know you got some companies to go run right now. So
no, I don't do anything. I'm going to go pick up my kid.
A good man. Practicing what you preach. All right, buddy. Well, we'll talk soon.